free? Yes. Gift worthy? No. So hurry into AT&T for the best free gift of the holiday season.
All France 12/31/16 online in select locations only. Requires new line of service and minimum $30 payment. 4G LTE not available everywhere. Taxes, fees, coverage, and other restrictions apply. Details at att.com/gophone.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at temperatures around 30 degrees today. It feels like the 20s with this northwest wind at about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, we're going to be looking at cloudy to partly cloudy skies. The low is going to be 20 degrees at the Sound Shore to about 13 to our north and west. Tomorrow, we've got sunshine, but it's a cold day still. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490. WGCH.
Greenwich, you need sports talk. I mean, WGCH really needs sports talk. Rob Adams, that's me, and Paul Silverfarb bring you a doubleheader Monday through Friday from 3 to 4 in conjunction with the Greenwich Sentinel. We're your source for high schools, pro sports, and all sports. Got a story? Want to talk? We've got the outlet for your sports needs. So join Paul and me for our doubleheader weekdays from 3 to 4 right here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio. And now, the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon. This is Beth O'Malley at the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour. I am on Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH, or WGCH.com from anywhere. And I am here today with Diane Ferber from the Greenwich Educational Group. What I'd like to do is touch on just to share some thoughts about Matthew Joseph Barba. He was a therapist in New Haven and worked in Hamden and New Haven, both with young men who were struggling with addiction. And unfortunately, our community lost Matthew a few days ago on Friday. And we're all very sad to have the loss of a local young very bright, kind, loving therapist. And he's been such a role model to so many young men in Greenwich in Fairfield County, from Greenwich all the way up the line to Hartford. He's worked with hundreds of young men in terms of helping them to achieve sobriety and to live a clean life out at Turning Point and Turnbridge halfway houses. So we're very sorry for his family, and I would like to just send out my love to his family, who is struggling with that loss today. I am here today to talk about college and having our kids come back from college. Diane Ferber is with us. Welcome, Diane.
Hi, Beth.
I'm so glad to have you here. Diane is a school psychologist who's worked in both the public and the private and private settings, and she heads up the Collaborative Center. She's the executive director of the Collaborative Center for Learning and Development at the Greenwich Educational Group, which is based out of Greenwich, Connecticut, but also has offices in other remote areas, including Stamford, where you work. Diane received her master's degree and certification of advanced study in school psychology from Fairfield University, and her undergraduate in economics from Brandeis University, with an MBA from the George Washington University. So you've had quite a shift in careers over the course of your life, and we'll be talking about that a little bit today. Diane sits on several local advisory committees focused on inclusion, student success, and collaborative support. So with that, I'd like to welcome you. Our topic today is perfect for today's date being December 19th, because we're talking about college students returning. And I can't tell you how many families have kids returning this week and next week. It's unbelievable. Every day there's an influx of more cars and traffic to our community. And one of the things that we as parents struggle with our children coming back is They show up with dirty laundry, they show up exhausted from finals, and they also show up with insights about how first semester went and what adjustments need to be made for second semester. And we as parents typically address really the first two issues. The dirty laundry is our first priority.
Definitely.
And then we know that there's a need for sleep because the kids get in bed and they don't wake up. They're sleeping till 2 and 3 trying to catch up, and we're wanting them up and about because it's the holidays, and so that's always an area of conflict. And then when they are awake, of course, they want to run out and see all their high school friends. So we as parents often feel chipped that we're not getting to spend some time with them. What I'd like to do today is really kind of pick your brain on what difficulties kids have, as well as what we as parents can do to help them. So I'd like to start with the question of, how did you transition into this field of working with college-age kids?
Actually, I had driven home my son from college just this weekend as well, so I'm one of the many parents in our region that are welcoming our college students home. Originally, I had a business career. I was working for Reed Elsevier, doing research and running trade events all over the country. And I had two children, and my children were clearly very bright, but also were not learning necessarily as easily as some of their peers. So in Stanford, they had been identified as both in the gifted program, but also needing some specialized supports. And I changed careers because I had the luxury to do so, to sort of go back to school and understand what was happening for them and with them, where their strengths were, how I leveraged those strengths to kind of circumvent some things that were harder for them, and also how to advocate for them. And I was particularly drawn to sort of the neuropsych world, where how your brain works and how doing testing and assessment of a child can really give you the roadmap and the blueprint for how they learn best.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting when you how you described the children earlier when we were speaking, because I've used that term on for my son as well, which is it's double winners.
It's double exceptional. They call them 2 E's now.
Oh, so the name has changed over time.
Yep.
Okay. So double exceptional. And double exceptional is a child who might have some type of processing delay or learning disability who's
Correct.
Been identified and very likely would need an IEP, a special program in place at the school for education. But it also indicates the twice exceptional, double exceptional, that they have a very high IQ.
And that they're very smart and very capable of learning if we teach them in the way that they best take in information.
Right. And I see it time and time again with children in my practice, and parents usually will come in trying so hard to explain to me that, yes, my child has a learning disability, but they really are bright, as almost like to make up for the fact that they have a learning disability. And I right away stop and say, hold on. I went through this. I have an extraordinarily bright child. We did all of the neuropsych testing. His IQ was off the charts. But at first, second, and third grade, he wasn't reading. Correct. And so a lot of parents will panic and say, what's going on? I luckily grew up in a home where my dad was in education. And so I understood that my brother, who had an incredibly high IQ and was extremely bright, much brighter than me, in fact. There's a plug for you, Neil. He struggled to process as well. And it was the identical processing delay that my son has. So I'm guessing that there's some hereditary issues in there.
Definitely. And parents often will look at their children who are struggling in the same direction of their own struggles, but not necessarily understanding the magnitude of the struggle may be different. And other elements to their processing or their psychological makeup may be different. And it's hard because school rewards certain capabilities and not other currency, at least in the elementary grades. So your ability to sit at the desk and write and read at an early age when developmentally you may not be there yet is a failure in that area, where later on you could be just the most amazing reader and a really strong thinker. But again, we have certain requirements in terms of what we want you to do, how we want you to do it, and the time that we're allotting you to do it, that not all kids are able to achieve in those structured requirements.
Right. And one of the frustrating things that often produces anxiety in these young folks is that they're aware in kindergarten, first, second, third grade, fourth grade, that they're not achieving at the level of their peers because they are so bright.
Absolutely. And then the brighter the child, the more compensatory strategies they come up with. And some of those serve them well and some of those serve them less well. Mm-hmm. Avoidance serves them less well. Mm-hmm. But the really bright kids are able to often mask or circumvent their issues until they really hit those grades where the requirements change on them, usually like third, sixth, and ninth, because third, everything becomes sort of abstraction. Sixth grade, you're really asked to track a whole larger array of classes and teachers and paperwork, and then in ninth grade for obvious reasons. So at different points, those bright kids suddenly, you know, feel like they've kind of got it down. They know they're different, but they're struggling. And then they hit these walls where suddenly the requirements have outpaced their ability to figure out what to do. And they might just keep doing what they've done before. And that's usually where we see kids in our practice come in for help to just sort of learn some new skills and some new strategies that will help them going forward.
And Diane, we talked earlier about the fact that we can do and will do a whole show on twice exceptional children and talk about, you know, it's just so fascinating to have a kid who's got an IEP, but yet they're in an honors class. That's just, it's incredible what our school systems are capable of working with today because we know so much more. Let's talk about that high achieving student in college and how, you know, they've learned to thrive. They're doing quite well in high school. They get into, you know, one of their top choices. They go off to school. Why might that child still have some difficulty with the adjustment?
So even the most typical strong student, college is fundamentally different than high school is. There's much more independent work, more long-term projects, less feedback during the semester on how you're doing. And research shows that students are usually not doing as well as they think they are, especially in freshman year. When they're figuring it out, there's less oversight on food and extracurricular activities and study habits. And even the brightest students have trouble sometimes adjusting to changes in requirements and the greater independence that comes with college.
I also, my best friend's daughter just went off to school, and one of her struggles has even been the social aspect of college and not being as maybe, how would you say, socially advanced. She's more of, I like to refer to it as more of a unicorn child, like a child who's still really been very sheltered and not wanting to be out there in the same way that some of her peers are in terms of, you know, love interests or partying. And that's been a hard transition for her.
I think we forget that all children develop at their own pace and not all elements of the child keep pace with the other elements. So you can have a child who academically matures much faster than they do socially or even emotionally. And then because college is so competitive and all through high school, we also have sort of a more scripted, bubbled oversight of students' lives, their social life, their self-management, even their high school class choices, their friends, their extracurricular, their papers. And when they finally get to college, all of a sudden that infrastructure that they've relied on is not in place. So often there's some element of their lives that suddenly they need a lot more problem solving and a lot more social nuances and a lot more decision making on their own. There was this great article in U.S. News and World Report where they reported that students are increasingly having difficulty with problem solving, learning from challenges, handling setbacks, social and academic. And even understanding how to form relationship with their professors. One college associate dean used words as immature or they don't have the confidence that they need.
Well, I hear that time and time again because the parents will call me up for support once if I've worked with a child in high school and they're off at college. The parents will call and say, I've asked my child, they're struggling with this. I've given them the advice. I've said, please go talk to the professor, come up with a plan, a strategy with your professor. And the child is too anxious about making that crossing that bridge to putting themselves out there in that way to the professor.
That's a skill that we assume children are going to have on their own, their ability to advocate and go in and ask for help. But sometimes a student who has really had a lot of their lives scripted or overseen to a large extent have not really experienced failure, never had that opportunity to take a test they did poorly on and deconstruct it to figure out, was it a study issue, was it a type of question issue, and an opportunity to go to that professor and or their teacher in high school and say, here's what happened, where did I fall short, and what should I do differently? And that's a different conversation than going to a professor and saying, I want the A, what do I have to do to get there? So if you don't have the experience of the failure and adapting and asking for help and you're not comfortable going to someone to help you with doing that, you're not going to know exactly how to go to the professor. The other thing is kids in college usually jettison any skill that they do have because they are now on their own and they're going to power through this and they're going to do beautifully. Often kids with learning supports do this as well. They stop doing all of the things that worked for them before because it's a new place and they're on their own. And then they are a little bit late in seeking out and asking for the help that they need.
Oftentimes when there were supports in place at the high school, they were put in place by parents and teachers, and the child didn't have to actually take responsibility for putting those extra supports in place, like even asking for extra time on exams. So when they transition to college, that's not an automatic, and the child then has to advocate. Mom and dad can't call up the university and say, my kid needs extra time because they have a processing delay. The child has to advocate for themselves and often is very hesitant to do that.
Exactly. They don't have the experience in doing that, in sort of taking the initiative. I mean, if you think about a child with extended time, they probably have some executive function vulnerabilities too. So you're asking them to figure out who to go to on campus, take that risk of going to someone they haven't met, figuring out their office hours, figuring out when in their schedule they're going to see that person. As opposed to withdrawing and hunkering down and going, I'll just sit in my room and I'll figure out how to do this harder. And again, if they've had certain compensatory strategies that had worked well, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to check. That's why it's so important, as you said in your opening, to, aside from laundry and sleep, to make sure that they have some time for self-reflection and to sort of unpack what happened to them over the semester and self-reflect on what's working for them, what's not working for them, and what they can do differently when they go back to school.
Right. Tell me, parents, I've seen parents struggle with not being able to communicate with universities and colleges because your child is now considered an adult.
Yes.
Is there anything that can be done to bridge that gap?
There is, actually. And I was lucky enough to have a parent cue me into this before my oldest went to school. When you bring your child to visit the school or to drop them off, and your child has extended time or anxiety or anything that in special services you are registering your child with, at that point you go in with your child and you have your child sign permission for you to be in touch with the school about that issue. And I would suggest you do that at the beginning when dropping them off and not once the issue has arisen. Because
yeah.
At that point, they're going to be really, really protective of themselves. So do it in that calm moment of excitement when you're dropping them off. But that really does help. So if you have an anxious child and you're concerned about that and you want somebody to look in to them and see how they're doing and to check in, you're able to do that because that paper was signed when you went to visit the school. That's also true, by the way, of grades and of financial stuff. You can get the bills, but you can't see anything else about it unless they grant you permission.
Right.
So it's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, if that's not done at the beginning, let me tell you, when a kid is suddenly not going to class and there's money on the line, they do not want to suddenly grant their parents permission. And I've seen that come up time and time again.
And remember also, our kids really want to please us, and if they're not doing well, they're going to feel that it's a failure or they're letting someone down, and they're going to be loath to, after all the time and effort in planning that got them where they are, and they want to put struggles in perspective as not failure, but they're not necessarily going to be forthcoming to share that or want you to know.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, what I'd like to do is take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to discuss with you, Diane, the getting your kid to talk when they're home for the holidays. Because oftentimes they're, you know, up in their room, they're sleeping, they're out with friends. But we really, as parents, we've invested so much energy into getting them off to school. We want to know what it's like. How's it going? Who are your new friends? So we'll talk about that in just a moment when we come back. This is Beth O'Malley at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at temperatures around 30 degrees today. It feels like the 20s with this northwest wind at about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, we're going to be looking at cloudy to partly cloudy skies. The low is going to be 20 degrees at the Sound Shore to about 13 to our north and west. Tomorrow, we've got sunshine, but it's a cold day still. This is Meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is Alice Bonvenuto at Greenwich Library. On the third Tuesday of every month, Greenwich Library offers an hour-long program called How To Tuesday. This month, on Tuesday, December 20th, a free program recommended for children in grades 6 through 8 meets from 4 to 5 o'clock in the meeting room. It's all about creating holiday cards and paper electrical circuits. The children will make the circuits and design the card to create a completely customized and unique card. This program is part of Create at Greenwich Library, a series designed to foster creative and cooperative learning for all ages. Come to Greenwich Library Meeting Room at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, December 20th, and learn how to brighten up a holiday greeting card with paper circuits. You can register for this program on the Greenwich Library website. I'm Alice Bonvenuto of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Hi, this is Beth O'Malley with the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on Be Well with Beth at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. And I am here this afternoon with Diane Ferber, and she works at the Greenwich Alliance. My computer just froze up, so can you explain your position?
Sure.
There?
I'm the executive director of the Collaborative Center for Learning and Development, which is part of the Greenwich Education Group, and we're located in Stamford, and we are a cross-discipline practice that work with children with learning differences and anxiety.
Perfect. What I'd like to do as well, as we're here talking about children coming back from college, is to open up our call-in line. And at any point during the remainder of the show until 3, you can call in at 203-661-5051. Again, that's 203-661-5051. If you have any questions in regard to having a child come back from college. The first thing that I would like to address is, how do we get our children to talk to us when they come back from school? And they oftentimes, you know, it's like going back to kindergarten. When they went off to kindergarten, they come home and you can't get a word out of them.
How is your day? Fine.
Yeah, fine.
I've had that. Yep. I think it's hard because when they come back, especially this time of year, we have so many things planned and there's so many people who want to see them and we want to do things with them and we have errands to run and they've made their own plans with friends. You know, remembering that your college student just spend months without curfews, your expectations, any monitoring, and they have their own plans. So the first is to carve out that space and not program every single moment. And the second is to, rather than sort of barrage the questions, to try to create a safe space in which that you can have that conversation in a non-threatening way. So a time when you're completely present. So that means your cell phone's not on, you're not doing anything. Many parents find driving works really well because you're not sitting facing your child and you're both looking out the window, but you have some good time together. And basically without distractions, where you're really, really present. And I would recommend asking a lot of general questions rather than specifics, and just to do a lot of listening, as opposed to, so how's this class going and did you get that paper in? But really how they are, how they are feeling about school, and just letting them know that you're really interested and you really want to hear about anything they want to tell you about. I would mention that driving does backfire. I just had 7 quality hours in a snowstorm with my son coming back from college on Saturday. And when we had the talk about the semester, ended up being in the 15 minutes prior to him going out on Sunday. But I think if you create that space and give your student some control over the timing of when they're comfortable sharing what they're going to share, I think that goes a long way into having that conversation.
When kids are up at school, what would you deem a normal contact with parents?
Every child is different. And I find a difference in between my two children. There was this great article in the New York Times where a parent wrote about how when their child called from college, it was only about really horrible things, and they did the equivalent of the child spitting out gum in their hand, as you do when you're a little child. So they would call and say how horrible everything was. And what they came to realize was they were the safety net, yes, and that where things were good, they weren't going to get those calls in their particular child's case. And while they might be up all night about what their child just shared, their child now felt 100% better because they got it off their chest and had gone out with friends. So you have those children. I would call them the gum spitters. And then you have the children who are going to want to call and share everything. And that's also going to change as they get more integrated into college, especially freshmen. You may hear from them a lot more in the beginning as they get their confidence up in solving their own problems. I think if you are concerned, you know, with cell phone, you can reach out. But I think every child and their relationship with their parent is so unique. I would just try to give them as much control over that schedule as possible and let them find their way.
With them coming home and not being so forthcoming, what are, you know, over the course of, they're usually home about 3 to 4 weeks,
correct,
right?
Yep.
Over the course of that time, what's the best way to draw out the conversation?
I think it really is just making sure there's those down times where you're really present and you're doing something together, maybe cooking something or doing the tree together or driving together, and just making the space opened. Chances are your student will share whatever they want to share. And again, they'll react more to this space to share than specific questions, because if you ask them something that's a hot button, they're going to shut right down. But I think equally important is how you actually respond to them if they do share that they're having a struggle. And I think in that moment, you have such an opportunity.
Right. Agreed.
So,
and one of the mistakes that I see parents make is jumping into their own emotional state of anxiety around what their child is sharing. If you're able to distance yourself emotionally and listen and be present and not jump in to getting anxious over what they're sharing, the child's much more likely to share with you.
Exactly. I see that same thing replayed over and over.
And what happens is kids will often report to me that they were okay, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, they were a 5 in terms of anxiety. But the minute that they share their concern with their parent, their mom or dad gets so worried that they spike up to an 8 or a 9 in terms of anxiety.
And I also think that our natural tendency is to fix.
Right.
So not only, you know, is it advantageous to not emotionally react to them, but it's also to take a step back and sort of first just say, thanks for sharing. I'm glad you trust me enough to tell me this. That's really, you know, just be there with them. That's really scary, or boy, that's really hard, or, you know, yes, I know that's a common struggle. And then sort of coach them as opposed to solve the problem. So perhaps a parent might say, so what have you tried so far and how'd that go? All right, so what are you going to try next? As opposed to, did you go to the dean immediately? Do you want me to call tomorrow? So again, you want to reinforce their ability and their confidence in solving their own problems rather than add to their anxiety and address their problem for them.
Right, right. And the last thing a 18 to 24-year-old wants to be told is what to do. So they would like to tell us what to do. But what I often tell parents, just imagine for that time when your kid is opening up that you're a therapist, because it's really all of those listening skills that we got in our master's programs. But that's what's needed in that moment when you're with the child, just to be present and to listen. Oftentimes, the child, as you said, with phone calls home, is really just looking to vent and
yes.
to get it off their chest.
Yep.
They're not looking for an answer from you, because you certainly don't have the answer in their opinion.
And the one thing we know about high school students is they vacillate between being 10-year-olds and 30-year-olds,
right.
You know, especially in that last year before they leave home. And they are coming back different people than they left, with experiences that are unique to them, separate from you, and much more their very own. So I think it's also just, you know, as a sort of life cycle issue, just renegotiating what that relationship looks like at home, and even their problem solving and your reaction to them. You know, they're not your child to manage in the way that they were when they were home. They are now something seeking independence, and part of what we want to do is give them that independence. So it's interesting, because sometimes they're ready before we are, and sometimes we're ready before they are.
I love how you describe them as 10, fluctuating between 10 and 30.
I told my son one day, it was like just one of those frustrating typical teen moments, and I said, you know, you change ages so fast. I
right.
need you to have like a flashing light on your head, so by the time you cross the room, I know which child has arrived, which made us both laugh. But it's definitely what it feels like to parent, I think, a child of that age.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about, and as soon as I say it, she'll know exactly who that I'm talking about her. But I had a client who I worked with the 2 years she went off to college. She went off to school. She came back. Now, she's very bright, very insightful, very well-spoken. I mean, she could put together the issues she was having today in her suite with all of her girlfriends and go back to childhood and could tell me exactly insight with so much insight as to why she was struggling, because this one reminded her of her mother and that one reminded of her father. And as she's sharing all of this, she's upside down on the couch in my office with her head on the floor. She grabbed her cell phone and she's probably tweeting while she's telling me the insights. So here she is sounding like she's, you know, 50 years old with a PhD in psychology, but yet she's flipped upside down like a little girl. So you know exactly who you are, Missy.
Communicating on two levels simultaneously is tricky, but good.
All right. In terms of what if a student is struggling and they're coming back and they haven't reached out for help while they're on campus, what's your advice to both parents and to the child?
So if a child is struggling, one of the things that's really helpful, especially if it's hard to do the dual role of parent and coach, is to have your child spend a couple of hours with like an executive functions coach, when they're home, and someone who can sit them down and specializes in college-age students and can say what worked, what didn't, what were the problems, and to come up with sort of a guided self-reflection and then a plan of what to put in place for when they return to school. And again, this can be in all spheres. This can be academics or social or even just, you know, getting your laundry done, and planners. And, you know, there are different things. There's self-reflection. There's making sure that you have all your projects down in a place. Sometimes it's finding a study group that gives you the structure around studying appropriately and people with different strengths. I know one of my children is very visual, and he always had a study group with one of the most detailed people in the world, and he was always the big conceptual place. And between the two of them, they were great. They were a great partnership. So the coach can sort of work with the student and say, these are things you should look for. And then if that relationship really works and that's valuable to the student, that relationship can even continue once they go back to school via Skype, where you've checked in and you know the student has two or three goals to work on. And again, that person could act as the coach, encouraging independence and problem solving for the student until they feel they can do it on their own.
And I want to backtrack a little bit because you're giving the answer, but can you speak to executive functioning to explain to our audience? Because that's such a hot term these days, and not everyone knows what that means.
Okay. Executive functions are really the circuitry in our brains that are responsible for prioritizing, planning, organizing, initiating, self-monitoring, adapting to different requirements. In our brain physically, it's located in our frontal lobes, which is kind of above your forehead, but it's less the location and more the circuitry, because there are pathways from that part of your brain, which is sort of your brain's orchestrator, to all the different parts of your brain. And one of the things science has found in the last 3 years is that the last part of our brain, when we're probably around 24, to really solidify and you know, finish developing is our executive functions frontal lobes, which means that your child's brain is still developing through age 24, which means it's not done until after college, which doesn't seem a good plan, but there it is. So we know that these are skills that students have in some part, strengths, and then often weaknesses. And we also know that the way that the brain develops this is that the pathways you use or lose. So the more that you use them, the stronger they become. And not all children, even the brightest kids, have strong executive functions across the board, so always need help in one area or another.
Okay. What we're going to do is take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about executive functioning and how you might spot a child that's having issues with executive functioning, because there's usually some big red flags that we'll describe, and you folks who are listening will go, oh, I know which of my children that one is. So we'll be right back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, part of the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at temperatures around 30 degrees today. It feels like the 20s with this northwest wind at about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, we're going to be looking at cloudy to partly cloudy skies. The low is going to be 20 degrees at the Sound Shore to about 13 to our north and west. Tomorrow, we've got sunshine, but it's a cold day still. This is Meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490. WGCH.
For 2 hours, every Thursday night at 6, listen in and even converse with the man in the know regarding all matters Greenwich. Listen to Sam Romeo's show, Greenwich Matters, brought to you by Parsonage, where their philosophy is to assist you in living life your way. From the beach to the backcountry, education, recreation, or politics, learn all about it on Greenwich Matters, every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I forgot holiday gifts for my clients.
Well, Staples is the place for great tech gift ideas, like Apple TV.
Terrific. I need ideas.
Staples Tech Gifts coupon book has great ideas and over $700 in savings on tech gifts your clients will love.
That's perfect, Staples guy. I don't know what to say. I mean, you did this just for me?
Well, yes, and everybody else.
For your tech gifts this holiday, visit Staples and look for Staples Tech Gifts coupon book.
While supplies last, ends 12/31/16, excludes clearance Staples U.S. stores only.
The U.S. economy has been getting stronger, and home values have been increasing. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans. Many of our clients have been taking cash out of their homes, a strategy that might work for you. The smart move is for you to refinance your mortgage right now with Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.51%. Call 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
GEICO presents a voicemail from your friend, Washing Machine.
Hi, it's Washing Machine. It's about, 7 o'clock on Wednesday. So, good news, bad news. First, I found your lost sock. Exciting! Also, I might have maybe flooded the whole basement. It's going to be pretty expensive. But hey, at least you got that sock.
Your washing machine won't pay for water damage. Luckily, one call to the GEICO Insurance Agency makes it easy to switch and save on homeowners insurance.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Be Well with Beth at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour. And I am here today with Diane Ferber, and she is with the Collaborative Center for Learning and Development at the Greenwich Education Group. Diane is here with me today talking about having our college students come home and how we can have a smooth transition and enjoy our time with them as opposed to getting frustrated with them for wanting to sleep a lot, as well as all of the dirty laundry they come home with. And then, of course, you know, as I remember from when I used to go home and visit, there were the arguments between my friends and family on who was going to get my time. So that was always a big issue that had to be managed and how to be fair. And I know my mom out in Arizona is listening right now saying she always made her friends the priority. But that was age appropriate, Mom. So
not going there.
You have kids home from college, so you're on the other end.
I do.
Yeah. So when we just left off, we were talking a little bit about executive functioning and that some of the struggles that our children have when they have any issues around executive functioning, being off at school without someone else in the home or in their room, I should say, to organize them. And a child with executive functioning is really struggling with some of the frontal lobe development, which, as you said, our frontal lobe is part of our brain that doesn't really fully begin to be fully developed until about the age of 24. And I've even read research that says there's still at 25 and 26 some growth going on. Wow. So it's fascinating that we're having kids go off and live independently, work jobs, be in school full time, and yet their brain is actually still developing.
And what's so interesting is that the current research also shows that just as when children are about 5 and their brains become cued to the language around them, and they actually have those other pathways that would have allowed other languages are pruned at a ferocious rate, and the pathways for their language are actually become, you know, much faster transmitters of impulses. The same thing's happening with executive functions through adolescence and into the early 20s. So not only are they still developing and aren't fully there, but if you're not using those pathways, you're losing them. It's the greatest pruning since like age five in our brains. So it's really important all the way through high school to get those habits before college to understand how to problem solve on your own, how to do things independently, how to ask for help, how to advocate, how to figure out your timing, how to chunk down long-term projects, because all of those pathways are skills that if you use them now, you get to keep them.
Right. And in terms of identifying a child who has executive issues, what should we look for as parents?
Well, college kids, again, they don't get a lot of feedback on how they're doing really until their final grade. So sometimes, you know, the grades come home or they've just gotten a paperback before their final or they didn't do well on their final. And so it's at that second that they realize they haven't managed their time well. A child who, as the semester goes through, are missing assignments, missing open hours with their professor that they had made an appointment for, are waiting to the last minute and finding out they have five things due tomorrow, and they knew they had these things in advance, but didn't start them far enough in advance to be able to do them all comfortably. Having trouble tracking their notebook or their papers, having a setback and not being able to know what to do with that, sort of freezing and catastrophizing it as opposed to sort of saying, okay, how do I work around this now? And when those things happen, the student becomes very, very stressed. And we also know from brain science that when you're stressed, your cognition goes out the window. I always use the example, we all know where we live, but we all miss our exits when we're upset. And there's a reason. So, you know, again, so the more anxious the student is, the more that can snowball. But what it really comes down to, if you think all of those issues are symptoms of not doing the planning ahead, not adapting to different changes or setbacks, not being able to plan or organize your things or your thoughts well enough and not doing good time management. So those things then turn into sort of academic issues and social issues. A student will withdraw. They'll just be sitting there doing papers with all-nighters all the time. And again, remember, these are young people who are away from home for the first time. So even if in the early months of the semester that balance worked for them, they don't necessarily adapt when the workload increases. And that's when they get into trouble.
What I often will look for when I'm working with a family and there's concern over executive functioning, oftentimes, even if the grades are very high, the parents will describe the child's when they were in elementary school, their desks were very disorganized. Their friends would help them organize it. Then when they're in middle school and high school, their rooms are cluttered, disorganized. There's food wrappers strewn in with dirty clothing, and nothing really seems to have a place. That's always, for me, a red flag to look for. You know, was there something else going on here that maybe wasn't picked up on? And what I find is that we, in our society here in Fairfield County, when a child has those types of organizational weaknesses, unfortunately, as parents, we're not always helping the child to become more organized. Oftentimes we have a nanny, a housekeeper, or a parent who's going in and organizing the room for the child. So when they go off to college, you don't have a nanny or a housekeeper or a mommy there to organize for you, and it's very hard then to manage because you haven't had to do that on your own.
I think those are excellent points. I think that's just a case of the adults being the executive functions for the child for a really long time,
right,
and not having let them develop the skills. And to bounce off something else that you said, you know, I'm less concerned when the child's room looks like that, and it's always looked like that. But if there's a change in your child, where this is a child for whom how they looked was always of paramount importance, and suddenly they're slightly disheveled, or their room is really uncharacteristically messy, or you see a change in their affect or their physical world. Those are really the kids that I would make sure that you really talk to and figure out what's going on for them.
And when a child is coming home and having somewhat of a struggle, certainly through your organization, they can find a coach to work with.
Absolutely.
I also refer out all the time when I'm not able to work with a family or be available to do the therapy around what might be, you know, depression or social anxiety fitting in, or even substance abuse.
Absolutely. Our group can work with anxiety and a variety of issues, a lot of transitional issues that are just the normal stress of growing up and developing and changing things. And if we get to an issue that we feel needs a little stronger firepower, we also will refer those out.
Okay, great. What I'm going to do is take just a brief break, and when we come back, I want to address a little bit about a gap year, because some children really would thrive better when they've had a gap year. So this is Beth O'Malley at the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Show at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at temperatures around 30 degrees today. It feels like the 20s with this northwest wind at about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, we're going to be looking at cloudy to partly cloudy skies. The low is going to be 20 degrees at the Sound Shore to about 13 to our north and west. Tomorrow, we've got sunshine, but it's a cold day still. This is Meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
Hi, I'm Jen Graziano. Tune in Wednesday mornings, 9:30 a.m. for Time to Talk. We will encourage conversations regarding sensitive topics that we all need to prepare for. We will cover issues that span from legal planning to emotional and spiritual guidance and so much more. Join me for this important program Wednesday mornings, 9:30 a.m. on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Hi, this is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, and I am here at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. I am here today with Diane Ferber, and we are talking about college kids coming home for the holidays and the stress of that for the child, how to intervene when there are issues. What I'd like to do is talk a bit about some cases where it's a little bit different of a path, but not necessarily bad. And I think, unfortunately, a gap year has been seen as a negative historically, but now we're starting to look at, with the growth and development of every unique child, their needs might really require some time off to regroup, to really grow and mature and gain the social skills needed to be away at school. And so both Diane and I have had in our practices children come home and who have started college after a semester, two semesters, three semesters, really benefit from being home for 1 to 2 semesters. And can you talk to us a bit about the difference between the child who really needs a gap year versus one who is going to be fine, thriving, going all the way through?
Sure. I think it's really important to remember that all children develop individually. I once worked with a boy who is a set of identical twins, and he suddenly, his senior year was faltering, and smart, able child, no learning differences. But when we finally sat down, he was not yet there. He didn't have, and he used the word urgency for, you know, really pushing through with all the college things, where his twin was completely, you know, knew where he wanted to go, knew why he wanted to go there. And developmentally, they were just at a different stage. And it was interesting because I worked with him at the beginning of his senior year. By the end of the senior year, he was ready to go. But he was a child at the beginning of the year. We had the talk about gap year. And it's really not necessarily about a child struggling even. It's just a child that may need a little bit more time to fully prepare and take advantage of what college has to offer.
I've worked with a young lady who was up at a NESCAC, very academically challenging school, was part of a D1 team. And the social pressures on her being part of the team, in addition to the academics, and she was a very strong student, it was just too much. Yeah. And she came home for one semester last year, and we really looked at socially what would be the best fit for her. And it turns out that not playing a sport, focusing on the academics and the creativity, and changing from a rural school to an urban school and transferring into New York City to a campus with other children who were transferring in simultaneously, there are beautiful programs in places at colleges for kids who do make the transfer because the place they picked originally isn't who they are today.
I think that's an excellent point. There's a student that I know very, very well who went right into school, probably one of the most capable students I've ever met. And then realized that the department wasn't the department he wanted, and he didn't find his peeps. And so what he ended up doing was taking a gap year, volunteering, and transferring happily.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today, Diane. And this is Beth O'Malley at the Greenwich Sentinel Hour, 1490 WGCH.
WGCH, Greenwich.
Berlin crash, Russian diplomat killed. I'm Chaz Henry.